Jake, to that moment you called me a couple of months ago talking about this dilemma of what is a theater company to do in the age of COVID.
That was it. And I'm to this day grateful that you said we'd love to. And we dove in, and the rest is history.
But specifically, you talked about the fact that people might be tired of screens.
Right. I was reading and myself experiencing a little fatigue from visual content. Not to mention, it's really difficult to produce, especially well. So the radio play hadn't been explored yet. And you were open to it. And the script was ready. So the original form, if you recall, was we were going to have a limited number of people in your studio per the mandate. And we were going to record it start to finish. And then that was going to be the radio show. But the mandates were tightened in November, and we took full advantage of it and recorded about 80% of the dialogue via Zoom. And then I edited it together, and the rest is, you know, what we get to listen to on your station.
And that all sounds so simple in the couple sentences you said, but did you kind of take a very deep breath when you realized the sheer amount of production work and effort that was going to take to produce it that way?
I did. I took several deep breaths. And while doing so, we posted the casting announcement for the production and had more than 200 people sign up, of which I called back about 80. So you and I were on the phone, Vern, going, what do we do? What do we do? While I was calling these people back via Zoom or over the phone. And it was just this wave of energy because, of course, we're all bored to tears. So I thought, I have this skill set. It's my second love to directing live entertainment. Let's go in.
And we can certainly say out of the – we've made no secret over the last few years of the extraordinary range of talent in Spokane. And they were just all there beating down your door, weren't they?
Everyone. And every single person that was called back had something great to offer. The truth is, while that process was happening, so was the evolution or de-evolution of the project to, you know, more confined, limited recording opportunities. So, yeah, it sort of all happened before our eyes and yet became what it is at the same time.
And at the center of this certainly is Scrooge, and wow, what a performance. Patrick McHenry Crutch, did you tell a little bit about getting wind of this? And I'm kind of guessing you were really hoping you could say bah humbug this Christmas.
Absolutely, yeah. It was an amazing process, and thank you for the nice compliment. Like Jake was just saying, you know, originally I think his plan was to somehow kind of socially isolate us on stage, so we'd all be in the same space, but socially distant, because at that time it was, you know, it was okay to do that. I think, Jake, you had kind of envisioned maybe having like plexiglass dividers, and so that way we could, all the actors could be still interacting with each other and playing off each other and record it that way. So when the new mandates came out and we could no longer do that, when Jake said, okay, now we're going to do it individually, recording everybody's voices, that presented a whole new, interesting challenge. I mean, it was an incredible process, but to, you know, we all got together once and on Zoom and read through it, you know, in that kind of herky jerky fashion. So you at least got to hear the other, you know, your other fellow actors, but then to actually record all of your own parts on your own and kind of trying to remember, you know, how did Pass say that? And I'm trying to, you know, do it from memory and then give a reaction and give a line read that would be appropriate. And just that Jake Schaefer held all that in his head and was able to string all that together with individual performances was just such a feat, and really all the credit goes to him. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because, you know, I I was even ever so slightly reluctant to even show the man behind the curtain today in this interview, because when we hear the finished product, it is so seamless and everything follows with exactly the right vibe from thing to thing. Did you have to do much of going back to your actor and saying, no, do that with more disgust in your voice? Or did these people just get it?
You already hit it on the head with a hammer earlier when you identified the fact that the talent pool in Spokane is incredible. The truth is this. They're not just talented by way of being great performers with incredible instincts and wide ranges of voices, but they also have good discipline in that when the medium shifted, so did the concentration. So the Zoom sessions at that point shifted from being rehearsals to recordings, because for the most part, I was getting line by line. In most cases, I had a couple of people recording via Zoom simultaneously. In other cases, I had a single actor reading down, let's say, page by page their part. And then what I did is I started the show, assembly number one, from no better place than Brian Harnatow's beautiful performance as Dickens. And I let that establish the pace. And then a very close second was Patrick McHenry Crutch, who, yes, there are a lot of amazing actors in Spokane, and this guy is included. He can do everything. So I played his colors off of Harnatow's, and then all the characters literally just sort of landed in there. So, yeah, of course, there's difference in quality and consistency, clarity, etc., in each of the actors' performances. But my job was to make the best recorded show we could based on what we could do, which was record via Zoom.
Yeah. And then, Patrick, have you been Scrooge before in your life?
Yeah, I was the musical, I want to say it was 2009, 2010. I did the musical version at the Civic. I was Scrooge then. And then 20-something years ago, I was Bob Cratchit in a couple of productions that we did at the Met with Spokane Children's Theater as well. So I love the show. I love doing Christmas shows. It's just such a – and what a different experience it is to, shifting from – it's so fun to be a part of people's family Christmas experience and then having to shift to this. But this was – special in a different way. I know when we listened, when you guys first aired it, we were all, we set up little fire pits in our backyard so that we'd all be socially distant and had Troy Nickerson and Don Taylor Reinhardt and Janice Abramson. We were all in kind of different corners of our yard, but we had a radio playing in the middle of us all, and we were all by our own little fire pits. And, so that was a really special experience. And I've had other family members that have driven around listening to it as they're looking at Christmas lights. And so to get to kind of still be part of that Christmas experience in a different way is really special. And, I feel honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. For me, when I heard it and when I thought of other Christmas carols I've heard, the Dickens is the Dickens and the Christmas carol is the Christmas carol, but some have been more entertainments. This one came off to me where it was the deep, heartfelt meaning really dominated more than any sense of entertainment or performance. Did either of you experience that when you listened from the outside?
Absolutely. I listened to it last night, Vern, for the first time since the weekend, and I heard things for the first time. I mean, not literally, but figuratively, absolutely. The story with the script is this. It's written by Barbara Field. It was ordered by the Guthrie Theater in the early 70s, and thereafter she started a wonderful relationship with Civic, where at that time her name was Dorothy Darby Smith. She was running the place, and Christmas Carol was sort of her baby. She would communicate with Barbara, and I think we produced it 7 times between the, anyway, it's about 10 times in total that we've produced a Barbara Field, A Christmas Carol. So in anticipation of this one, which we were to present on the main stage November and December of this year, Brian Harnateau, the resident playwright, and I reconnected with Barbara, who's in her late 80s and lives in Minneapolis and is as brilliant as the day is short nowadays, but in her case, beyond words, and worked with us to essentially assemble various drafts of her script. Our mission was a two-act version with the most Barbara Field language. And there's phrases like perfume them with orange skins in this script that you'll never find anywhere else because it's just her connection to the authenticity of Charles Dickens and who she thought of him as a man.
And a little parenthetical note, that is the real Barbara Field that does the first 20 seconds of the production that we hear, isn't it?
It is. We recorded her via Zoom, too. She was gracious and called in one afternoon, and Brian Harnateau and I were very proud to get her in the can. That was a huge get for us just because, you know, based on the history and the quality, it's a real pleasure to work with a writer like that. That doesn't happen all the time. So for Civic to get that opportunity, I'm very grateful.
Yeah. And back to Patrick, talk about, as an actor, the wonderful opportunity to do the evolution that Scrooge goes through.
Oh, it's just beautiful. It's just one of those roles that, you know, no matter how many times when I did it on stage and reading and rereading and recording this one, you just feel his fear as a human being, this isolated little bubble that he's living in, and to get him slowly to come out of it. And I never, in all the times I perform it on stage and in doing this reading, it makes you well up because you can just feel him, you know, that spirit opening up, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it. But his transition it's one of those things that would be fun to do every year, you know, because it's always just so special to play that character.
And what about unique poignancy this year?
Oh,
well
said, Vern. Yeah. I mean, just that just kept on coming back to us as an entire cast. It's like the need for forgiving and warmth and understanding and, you know, is just so much more there this year than it ever has been.
Yeah. Well, the two of the couple dozen people or more, the 23 actors and production people and everything else involved with this production of A Christmas Carol, we have two more publicly scheduled performances. The next is this Sunday at 4:00, which is normally when we would be doing selected shorts. So that will be a time that people are very much used to hearing exactly dramatic versions of words. And then we will do one on Christmas Eve afternoon at 2:00. And then who knows after that. But anyway, the productions of A Christmas Carol that are on Spokane Public Radio. Any further thoughts from you, Jake?
Just how grateful I am that you gave us a venue, Vern. We've been paused since March, so this is an awesome opportunity that we're all very grateful for.
Mm-hmm. It's felt
like
great.
Patrick said, it really is the story of the year, if you will. And to have an opportunity to share it this year, several months ago, was not certain.
Yeah, well, it has happened. So congratulations on the extraordinary effort and the extraordinary ability that we heard in the results. So it was really fun. So thank you, Jake Schaefer and Patrick McHenry-Crutch.